Thank you. So I also like to thank the organizers for kindly inviting me to this great conference. And also I'm part of the program, Topological Quantum Matter, and I'm enjoying my time in Santa Barbara. Okay, so my talk is based on collaboration with Yuan Min, who is here, and Yin Gang. And actually, Yuan Min gave a talk on basically the same subject a few weeks ago as a part of the program. But I think I'm going to give you some different perspective, hopefully. But there will be some overlap. Okay, so first, I like to just remind you what is a large gauge invariance or large gauge transformation. So large gauge transformation is just a kind of gauge transformation. So you have, for example, wave function or field operator labeled by spatial coordinate x. And a gauge transformation here, I'm focused on U1 gauge transformation. Then you put some phase factor, which depends on the location. So this is just a general gauge transformation. And if you do this, then gauge, sorry, vector potential is transformed like this. And then, so there is a so-called covariant derivative, which is invariant under this kind of gauge transformation. So this is what we learn in quantum mechanics or electromagnetism. But something interesting happens if we consider so-called non-simply connected space, like this annulus or torus or something. Then this phase factor lambda can be multivalued. That is, for example, if you have annulus like this, let's say lambda is zero here, then you can increase lambda gradually. Then when you get back to the same point, lambda can be, of course, zero. So I want to impose some continuity on gauge transformation. But this lambda can be 2 pi because this is a phase factor. So you cannot distinguish 0 and 2 pi. So of course, if you require continuity or regularity of this lambda everywhere, and if you have simple plane, then lambda should come back to the same value. But if you have a hole in the system like this, then you can have this kind of non-trivial, topologically non-trivial gauge transformation. And this station corresponds to inclusion of unit flux quantum inside the hole, as it is well known. So suppose you have an annulus or torus, and then you put unit flux quantum inside this hole, then this unit flux quantum is expressed in terms of vector potential. So the Hamiltonian in the presence of unit flux quantum is different from Hamiltonian in the absence of vector potential or unit flux quantum inside the hole. But they must be equivalent because in general, if you have some non-zero flux inside the hole, you can detect this quantum mechanically through Aharonov-Bohm effect. But if your flux happens to be just a unit flux quantum, then as you know, there is no Aharonov-Bohm effect. So for the observers outside this hole, there is no way to distinguish. So these two Hamiltonians must be equivalent, but they are not exactly equal. So mathematically, they are equivalent up to this unitary transformation, which is called large gauge transformation. So this is exactly, so here I give you expression for lattice system, but this is in fact exactly the gauge transformation I introduced in the previous slide. That is a phase factor lambda is proportional to x. And for x equals zero, this phase factor is zero. But if you go around the system and increase x by Lx, then this phase factor becomes 2 pi. So this is example of large gauge transformation. And this large gauge invariance has had several applications in physics, condensed matter physics. And one famous example is Laughlin's so-called gauge argument. I'm not going to repeat this argument for you, but basically he used this gauge invariance to say that the whole conductance must be quantized under certain conditions. And then later I used this idea to generalize Lipschitz-Matisse theorem to higher dimensions. So, of course, the Laplace argument is great, I think, but there are several subtleties, at least for me. And one of the subtleties is that to explain the observed quantization of whole conductivity in real experiment, you need to include impurities, and then impurities make you know, localized states, then still there are some extended states, and so on and so on. And, in applying Laplace's argument, you have to assume that there are maybe gapless excitations, but if those gapless excitations correspond to localized states, then those states are insensitive to flux insertion, which is reasonable assumption, but still I think mathematically maybe subtle. But there is another subtlety, I think, which is in original argument by Laplace, he used cylinder like this with two edge states, and basically by inserting flux inside this hole, you transport electron between two edge states. And so this is copy from his original paper. And at some point you have to argue that the integer number of electron is transported from one edge to the other. And this is, of course, I think reasonable, but still, for me, it's a bit subtle because, for example, we can ask why don't we consider superposition of zero electron transport and one electron transport? You can, of course, transport one electron from here to there or zero electron from here to there, and maybe you can consider superposition of these two. It's maybe trapped state or something, but still, I don't know how to exclude that kind of possibility. So, and also, this adiabatic insertion flux is perfectly okay for gap system. But once you have edge, then edge states are gapless. So, this adiabatic argument becomes a bit subtle. Of course, I'm not saying he was wrong, but I think, of course, the conclusion must be right. But there may be more clean way to do this Laplace argument. And I'm not going to discuss this second point, but in this talk, I want to maybe try to avoid this subtlety in some other way. Okay. Then I will switch subject a little bit, then come back later to this question. So there is a quantity called polarization or polarization density, which is basically, this is according to Wikipedia. So polarization or polarization density is just a electric dipole moment per volume or something like that. And if you are given some material, then usually you can define electric dipole moment. On one side, maybe you have positive charge, and on the other side, maybe you have accumulation of negative charge. Then this material has electric dipole moment. And often this is a kind of bulk property proportional to the volume of the material. Then you can define this polarization, which is dipole moment per volume. And this dipole moment is, of course, perfectly well defined if you have usual material with boundaries, edges. But often you want to compute a bulk property of material using periodic boundary condition. For example, if you want to apply band theory calculation, then band theory assumes periodic boundary condition. And once you impose periodic boundary condition, you know, electric dipole moment is not completely very defined. It's at least becomes rather subtle object. And so there has been a lot of literature, a lot of development over several decades on so-called modern theory of polarization, initiated by people like King Smith, Vanderbilt, and Resta, and so on. And I'm quite new to this subject, so maybe you can correct me if you're, I'm wrong. But I think their initial motivation was to, for example, to apply Band theory calculation to calculation of this polarization, which is important physical quantity. And as I said, once you impose periodic boundary condition, the definition itself becomes kind of subtle, but still you can do some calculation. And initially, these people developed a modern theory of polarization based on the single particle picture or band theory approach. And there is a lot of interesting stuff, which I'm not going to discuss in this talk. But then later, Rest and Sorella tried to generalize this modern theory of polarization to really many-body theory, many-body system, without relying on the band theory picture or single particle approximation. And this is their pioneering paper. And so this is what they propose in single slide. So first, they introduced the center of mass of electrons or something. So in actual materials, usually ions are fixed and the electrons are moving around. So you can define the center of mass for electrons like this. So here I'm using lattice notation, but you can also generate this to continue. So this is the number operator times x coordinate, then you sum over all lattice sites, then this gives you the center of mass for electron or something. Actually, this quantity was discussed by Hatsugai last week, if you are in the program. And this quantity is useful because, for example, if the electric dipole moment of material increases, then the basically the whole electron should shift in one way. So center of mass for electron should change if you change polarization. So this is actually a useful quantity, but the problem, as I said, is that if you impose periodic boundary condition, then this center of mass is not well defined. So what Rest and Sorella did was that, okay, then you can put this quantity in the exponential, 2 pi I times this center of mass, and divide by system size, length of the system in x direction. Then this exponential operator is completely well defined, even under periodic boundary condition. So what they said was that then, okay, you can take expectation value of this operator in the ground state, and you can decompose this to amplitude and argument. This argument part corresponds to the polarization in the ground state. Actually, this Px I defined is not dipole moment per volume, but with some factors, but it's proportional to the polarization. And in this way, it's clear that this Px is not uniquely defined. It has ambiguity modulo integer, because you can add any integer to Px, and the expectation value doesn't change. So in this way, you can define polarization of the system even within the periodic boundary condition imposed, but up to some ambiguity. And interestingly, in this way, Px has some ambiguity, but if you consider the time evolution of the system, then time derivative of this polarization just gives the total current in x direction. And this current is completely well-defined without any ambiguity. And if you remember my first part of the talk, this operator is actually nothing but this gauge transformation operator, large gauge transformation operator. Or in other words, if you are familiar with Lipschitz matrix, this is nothing but, in one dimension, this is nothing but the so-called twist operator introduced by Lipschitz matrix. And maybe Geraldo might have told me much earlier, but this relation apparently has been overlooked for a long time, and it was pointed out by Nakamura and Voigt in their paper in 2002, and he told me personally about this, but somehow I didn't carefully look into this polarization issue, and after more than 10 years, I'm coming back to this relation. Okay, so this Lester Solera paper, I didn't know much about this until recently, but they made very interesting remarks. For example, using this quantity, maybe you can distinguish insulator from conductor. That is basically the intuitive picture is that in insulator, electrons might move a little bit, but they are basically bound to some ions. They cannot move too far. That means that you can really define polarization. So polarization is well defined in case of insulator. But in case of conductor, electrons are moving around freely. So polarization is not really well defined. That is reflected in this expectation value. That is, they propose to define polarization by argument of this expectation value. So in the insulator, they argue that this expectation value should converge to some non-zero value, even in the Samurai limit. Then you can define polarization. In Samurai limit, the large system size. And they argue that in Samurai limit, in the limit of system size going to infinity, in case of conductor, this expectation value should go to zero. Then the polarization is not well defined. And they gave some sort of proof relating this property with conductivity and so on. And I don't know how much their proof is rigorous, but I think physically, you know, intuitively, this picture is very appealing, and probably this is essentially correct. Yeah. Superconductor from conductor, or? Okay, I haven't thought about this carefully, but a superconductor is type of conductor, so yeah. Okay. So now that we have found the relation between polarization and gauge invariance, I'm going to use this relation to derive some useful results. And the first, let me apply this to Laughlin's argument for integer quantum Hall case. Of course, we know the result, so I'm not going to derive any new results, but I hope this is still illuminating. So as I said, the original Laughlin's argument has some subtlety about edge states. So let me eliminate edge state from Laughlin state. That is, let me consider this torus, which may be not realistic, but for theorists, this is convenient system. So I consider quantum Hall state on the surface of this torus, two-dimensional torus. And then I assume that the ground state must be unique. Then, so polarization in y direction is defined by the expectation value of this operator ui in the ground state, as I introduced previously. And the argument of this expectation value gives the polarization. And as I said, quantum Hall state, I assume to be some kind of insulator. So according to Lester Solera criterion, this expectation value should go to some non-zero value even in the Samurai limit. So it does not vanish. And now I want to insert this flux phi and increase this flux phi from zero to unit flux quantum. Then if I insert this flux, electric field induced in x direction, and that induces Hall current in y direction, which changes the polarization in y direction. But after inserting this unit flux quantum adiabatically, and if the system has a gap and the ground state is unique, then the system should come back to the original state, original ground state. Then this expectation value should be also the same after insertion of unit flux quantum. So this guy comes back to the original value, but this argument is multivalued function, so it can change as a function of time. And the time derivative of this py is current in total current in
y direction.
So the time integral of this current is, the time integral of this current corresponds to the change of polarization. And this polarization had the ambiguity of integer. So this time integral of current is e times some integer n. Whereas this current is related to electric field induced in x direction times Hall conductivity and system size in x direction. So if you integrate, then this is given by Hall conductivity times unit flux quantum. And if you equate these two, then Hall conductivity is just given by e squared y h times integer. Of course, this is very known result, but this is basically the same as Laplace's argument. But using this polarization, you can derive this without using the H state and without worrying too much about gapless H state and whether you can consider superposition and so on. Okay, so this, of course, we know that there is a paper by New and Saures and Wu back in 85, which generalized TKNN to interacting system, and they use periodic boundary conditions. So this is probably equivalent, but maybe intuitively this is more easily understandable. Okay. So next I want to discuss something less trivial, that is quantum Hall states on the lattice or periodic potential in two dimension, and flux phi equals to P over Q per bracket, and on the periodic potential lattice, we can also define an important quantity, that is particle density, that is number of particles per site or more generally unit cell. And as you know, in the presence of this magnetic flux, magnetic unit cell is enlarged from the original unit cell. So number of particles per magnetic unit cell is Q times the original particle density. And first, I want to discuss integer quantum Hall state with unique ground state. Then this number of particles per magnetic unit cell should be integer. But the original density of particle can be fractional. And to make a discussion explicit, I want to consider Landau gauge. So for simplicity, for example, in square lattice, we can put AX vector potential in x direction to zero, and set this vector potential in y direction as phi times x. Then I can have flux phi per each bracket. Then I consider torus of system size Lx times Ly. Then as you know, total number of flux per this torus must be integer. So that puts restriction on the system size, that is flux phi was P over Q. So Lx times Ly should contain the factor of Q. And for later convenience, I choose the system size in x direction Lx as a multiple of Q. Then I can choose Ly to be any number, especially mutually coprime with Q. But one subtle issue is that once I choose Ly to be coprime with Q, then there is no magnetic translation symmetry in x direction in usual definition, because in usual definition, magnetic translation symmetry is translation in x. Then, of course, you change the vector potential. So you eliminate this change by gauge transformation. But if you check this, you can easily find that for this choice of system size, actually, there is no gauge transformation which cancels this translation. But we can still find some new effective symmetry, which is not really the symmetry, but something which acts like symmetry. That is, instead of gauge transformation, I can adiabatically insert some flux, phi Ly, to y direction, which increases vector potential in y direction by this amount. Then vector potential in x direction does not change. So this changes vector potential. Sorry, maybe I'm using inconsistent notation, but the point is that so vector potential in y direction depends on x coordinate. And if I insert this flux, you increase this vector potential. And that can be canceled by translating the system in x direction. So I can introduce some new translation operator, which is translation accompanied by this flux insertion. So this leaves Hamiltonian invariant. And also, if you have a gap, then this operator maps the ground state to the ground state. So this, as far as the ground state is concerned, this acts like a symmetry generator. Then we can discuss the commutation relation between this UX gauge transformation operator or this polarization operator by Lester and Solera and this new magnetic translation-like operator, TX double tilde. And this new translation operator is defined like this. So it consists of two parts. And the commutation relation between this UX comes from these two parts. And the first comes from that is translation part, simple translation part. So this appeared in this Lipschitz-Matisse type theorem. And this just counts the number of particles. So I get some factor, phase factor of particle density times Ly. And then next, this is a flux insertion operator on UX. So this flux insertion induces electric field, which in turn induces Hall current. That changes the polarization. So I can count how much this polarization is changed. Then the change of polarization should be reflected in this phase factor. So I get this this phase factor. So the commutation relation in general has some non-trivial phase factor coming from these two parts. And if I combine the commutation relation between UX and TX double tilde contains this phase factor, Hall conductivity times flux density minus particle density times Ly. And now, if I assume that the system has a unique ground state, then the polarization should be well defined. That is, expectation value of UX should be well defined. And basically, if you apply this operator TX double tilde, it changes the expectation value of UX by this factor. But if you have unique ground state, you cannot really change the expectation value or polarization. So this phase factor must be 1 for any Ly. And that puts that restriction that if you have unique ground state, then Hall conductivity must obey this relation with respect to the flux density and particle density. And actually, this has many interesting consequences, which was discussed by Yuan Ming a few weeks ago in the program. For example, if you have a pi flux per bracket, then this phi is 1/2. And if the particle density is 1/2 or 3/2, it's half of integer filling. And if you have unique ground state, then this whole conductivity must be odd integer, cannot be even to satisfy this relation. So that's already a non-trivial restriction. Actually, this relation was derived much earlier by Dana and Avro and Zach using this band theory. So this was known for free electrons. But now in our derivation, we didn't assume any free electron stuff, just unique ground state. So this is valid also for interacting electrons, for even for bosons, as long as the ground state is unique. Okay. And we have also denied this to fractional quantum Hall state. For that, this fraxon picture is useful. So instead of inserting flux in uniform manner, you can create so-called fraxon by inserting plus phi zero flux here and the anti-fraxon minus phi zero flux here. And then create this pair first, then move this fraxon along y direction. and because of the periodic boundary condition, this fluxon comes back, then you can pair annihilate. And you can define this entire process as this F. And then you can derive similar commutation relation between this new translation operator TX and this fluxon dragging and the pair annihilation operation F. So you get the same phase factor. So basically this process is very much like ordinary flux insertion as discussed by Shaoguan Wen many years ago. So this is like inserting flux tube locally, then extend. Then after this process, you put one flux tube inside the hole of the torus. So if you assume unique ground state, you can derive the same relation. So this is the same result as before. But if you apply this for fractional case, you can now obtain a generalized relation. That is, this phase factor can be regarded as Tx times F times Tx inverse times F inverse. And pictorially, this means that you first do F inverse. That is, you create fluxon anti-flux fluxon pair and move fluxon to this direction. Then translate by one side, then move fluxon to positive y direction. So this entire process should be one for integer quantum Hall state. But for fractional quantum Hall state, this can be different. And physically, this non-trivial phase factor can come from the mutual statistics between fluxon and so-called background anion. That is, in fractional quantum Hall state, you can imagine like some so-called background anion is sitting on each side. And if you move fluxon this way, you enclose these anions by fluxon. So you pick up some new phase factor proportional to mutual statistical angle between fluxon and background anion times system size in y direction. And we already know that this product has this particular phase factor. So if you equate these two phase factors, then you obtain a generalized relation for Hall conductivity in a fractional case, where this mutual statistical angle between fluxon and background anion appears. So in the case of integer quantum Hall state with unique ground state, this last term was absent, and now we have this new term. And this mutual statistical angle has also some relation with a number of degenerate ground state. Okay, so that's basically all what I wanted to say. But from my perspective, as I said, this gauge invariance was applied to quantum Hall effect by Laplin, and this is also related to Lipschitz-Mantis theorem and Ratzinger theorem and so on. And so there are some connection among many important concepts in condensed matter physics. But something I overlooked was that, this entire business is apparently also deeply related to electric polarization. And I think more application can be made out of this connection in the future. Thank you very much.
So you had this result that if you have a pi flux per decade, an odd number of particles, and the ground state is unique, then sigma xy must be odd.
Mm-hmm.
And you said it's also valid for bosons. But we know that for bosons, the ground state is unique, the whole connectivity must be even. So is this then the statement that are you basically proving that the ground state cannot be unique, or is gapless?
Sorry.
No, but if there is a Hall conductivity, if you have diagonal Hall things or something.
This one.
So that statement. Mm-hmm. So there's two statements there. With these assumptions, the Hall conductivity must be an odd integer.
Yeah. That if all
it
these,
applies also for bosons.
I think so. If all the requirements are met, of course, I need a gap. Maybe I forgot to put. Yeah.
So, but since these two can't be simultaneously true, you know, something's got to get.
So, can you repeat? So you have counterexample or?
Well, for bosons, we know from that the unique ground state, the whole connector relay must be even.
So
it must be that with these conditions, pi flux per packet, half or integer filling.
There is no unique ground state. With a gap. Okay. Perhaps.
Other questions? Maybe I can ask you to elaborate a little bit. Certainly, polarization has been discussed in the context of topological insulators as well. I was wondering if you have thought about that and whether there's anything that you feel this has to add there.
Yeah, I think, yeah, so maybe I'm just ignorant, but this pumping has been also discussed for topological insulators, and this Z2 index can be related to the charge pumping and so on, which must be also related to this polarization. And I think there was discussion about this, but I just don't fully understand this business for topological insulator. So maybe somebody can comment.
So yeah, in the case of time-rosen insulators, when you thread half a flux, both zero and flux pi are time-rosen invariant. But you change from having a Kramer degeneracy at the edge to not having a Kramer degeneracy, or vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
In that sense, it's a time-rosen polarization instead of a charge polarization. But the important thing is that it's threading half a flux, not a full flux.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd be interesting. Okay. I never know how to generalize this to the write down for the many bodies system.
Right. So that may be interesting question, how to generate this many body system. Thank you.
Other questions?
Sorry, I just have a small question. In one of your slides, you had this formula. Current was the time derivative of the argument of the expectation value of ux.
Mm-hmm.
Is there an easy way to see that, why that's true?
Maybe this one. Okay. So you are asking why this current can be related to the time derivative of this one, defined by the expectation value of this operator. Okay. That's right. Maybe that's actually a bit subtle point. So if you look back, not this expectation value, but if you go back to the original definition, then derivative of exponent in this operator is nothing but current. I think that's kind of standard relation. But once you take expectation value, this may not so obvious. So maybe we need some another assumption, like for example, so I omitted this part, but for this polarization to be well defined for given ground state, actually this polarization defined this way should have small fluctuation. That is, so this is just a expectation value, but you can define kind of distribution of polarization in given ground state. And for this quantity to be very defined, which was actually discussed by Resta and Sorera to some extent, was that this distribution should have rather small widths. Then you can define this ambiguously and up to this integer ambiguity. So I think, yeah, so to say this for this expectation value, I think we need assumption like the distribution of polarization has sufficiently small widths for given ground state, also during the process of adiabatic insertion of the flux. Yeah, thank you for the question.
Thank you.
In the presence of like rotational symmetry or lattice or reflection symmetry, where the polarization vector has to be on a sort of high symmetry point of the lattice, is there a similar argument that you could use to make a some sort of charge pumping?
Yeah, actually, this is not what I did, but Yuanmin or In did. You can generate this to so-called non-symmorphic symmetry using the glide operation. Yeah, so that can be done. And maybe your question was different, but
I was just curious if there was a similar relation with a mirror churn number, for example.
Okay, I haven't thought about this, but hopefully there are more application using that kind of symmetry, higher symmetry. Thank you.
Okay, are there any other questions? If not, let's thank Masaki again.